Started. Slight change to our agenda. Item number two, transit development plan. Mr. Knauer would like to go first because he's got another appointment to get to. So up at the top of the list and then continue. So Tony?
Okay. Well, thank you for changing your agenda. We're pretty excited. This morning, Brian and Stuart met with drivers, started to go over the details, kind of get into the weeds, and a lot of exciting things coming. Today, they're going to discuss the service plan, and you're going to have other chances to get into this. If you want to click down through. This is the transit, the outline of all the plan elements of the transit development plan. So today we're going to look at the fixed route service plan. And as you can see, there's a lot of other pieces to this plan. We'll bring those to you. There's drafts. We're going to be talking policies, fares, park and ride, the capital, and eventually the financial plan, the biggest part. So with that, I want to spend a lot of time on it. I want Brian and Stuart to have as much time as possible. They'll be able to stay longer. This week they launched their community input meetings. They're meeting all different quadrants of the city. So they've got that going on. In fact, tonight there's one. So.
Here you can see the preliminary recommendations we've come up with for the transit development plan so far. And this is the key one here is that the plan will be implemented in two phases. The first phase will be to increase our capacity to meet our current transit or our current service demands. And then also, second phase will be beginning in year two of the plan. We'll begin to implement the redesign of the route structure. So some of the other recommendations that we have come up with as, at this point are based on our outreach, what we've heard from the public, our data analysis, and study of other systems. And so establishing Sunday service, extending our service span during the day, earlier in the a.m., later into the evenings, evening service, crosstown routes, increasing frequency through highly traveled corridors, and keeping an eye on newly developing areas that need service and emerging corridors there with maybe a more advanced technology such as BRT farther down the road. And then our park and ride system is really, really reaching its capacity. We need to keep an eye on that and make sure that we're expanding capacity there where it's needed. I think with that, I will turn it over to Stuart. He's from AECOM, the consulting group that is doing a lot of the research and putting together our plan for us.
Okay. And Brian did a good job introducing. My name is Stuart Geltman. I'm with AECOM. I am a member of our bus service planning group that does, it's a national practice. You can go into the next slide. So I'm going to start very top level, and I'll go through this pretty quickly. Now, what is a transit development plan? You saw Tony's outline in a previous slide, and this is very simple, very similar, where we're looking at the future of transit in Rochester over the next 5 years and setting the stage for what's going to come later on. So our approach, this was more used in our pitch here, but we really believe in a collaborative system method of coming to our recommendations. We looked at the existing system, looked at a lot of data, analyzed that to see how the routes are performing, where they're performing well, where they're not performing well. We talked to the public. As part of talking to the public, we also talked to the operators to understand what some of the issues are with the current system, how it can improve, what people are looking for. And then we also looked at where Rochester is going and where it's growing. Amongst looking at similar cities to Rochester, and when we put that all together, we know we have to meet a few needs, including our ADA regulations and guidelines and Title VI. So this pretty much is a good overview of what I was just saying. But one thing I want to focus on is we're also coordinating with other activities. We know that the transit development plan is not the only thing going on in Rochester that's guiding transportation investment into the future. There's also the comprehensive plan and the primary transit network that's coming out of that. And we are really setting the stage in this plan to build a primary transit network and bring the transit network. We know from the Destination Medical Center studies that Mayo is planning on growing, and that they're going to do a lot of growing in downtown, making this a major destination and continuing the strength of downtown Rochester, and how that plays into the transit network. So this is our very quick schedule. We are now, we have, since we last talked to you, we did complete quite a number of tasks. We have our park and ride survey completed. We're doing our social engagement. We have our draft system plan, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So just how did we get to our system plan? We looked at service guidelines, and we wanted to really look at where service should operate, and when and how much. Some of the issues with the service is, are buses going too slow or too fast? How can we address that? How far apart bus stops are? When is a bus loading means? When is a bus overcrowded and when it's not overcrowded? We also have guidelines for when a shelter should be placed, what the equipment should look like, how it should be arranged, and what kind of public information should be provided. We look at fare box recovery. How much of the budget for RBT comes from fares? We look at how the routes are performing and their productivity. Usually that's measured by how many people are carried by unit of service. Usually we use revenue service hours. And then the criteria for evaluating new services. So when we looked at our peer groups, we compared RPT to a number of peers for both fixed route and ZIPS. And what we're seeing, what this is really telling us is RPT performs much better than peers in so many categories. Just because of the nature of the usage, the nature of our downtown generators that are really supporting our services. And we have to be honest, that there are policies in place here in Rochester that really focus on being very transit friendly and encouraging people to use the buses. You look at the ZIPS, you also see a pretty good system. It's not as big as many of the other Minnesota systems, but due to our medical facilities in downtown and near downtown and other service providers, ZIPS is actually going through a pretty slow growth, a very controlled growth. Most systems are growing by about 5 to 10% per year, and what we're seeing is a growth that is just not nearly as high, which is, you know, which may be a little bit of an issue. There might be some unmet need, but we really think, looking at the other services that are here in the city, that they are being met by other services. And the fact that the fixed route service is focused on where a lot of people are trying to go, people are able to utilize that fixed route system and not need to use the ZIP service. When we go into public outreach, the way we are doing this is we did a number of online surveys, one geared towards the decision makers. Perhaps a few of you at the table today filled out one of these surveys about a year ago. But we're also going out to the community. Our first round, we went to a few key bus stops to talk to the riders to hear what some of the issues are. We talked to the bus operators. Tonight, we are going to a public meeting, and we'll be doing that this week and part of next week. We had onboard surveys where we had people stationed onboard the buses handing out questionnaires to riders. We did the public meetings. We were very focused, and the pop-up events are what we did at some of the bus stops. So what are some of the key findings we had? We basically, 37% of RPT users are employed by the Mayo Clinic. We heard a lot about the need for later service and Sunday service. We found that, I'll focus on a few things that are not on here. We found that very few people are actually transferring downtown. And people like using the bus. Those are really our key findings from our surveys. Congruency analysis. This is a little bit of a fancy term that basically says, let's compare the community to where the service is. We do that two ways. We look at a number of demographic indicators to see where people are most likely to use transit and see how transit service covers the community. What you're finding is there are very few dark areas. If you look at the map, the darker areas are places where people are more likely to use transit. Those areas are well served by the current RPT network. Some of the areas where you're seeing less service, you're seeing very light colors. These are areas that have populations that are less likely to use the services. Now, on this map here, we mapped generators. Where are people going? A lot of medical facilities, major shopping facilities, high schools, colleges, a number of social service agencies. That's where people are going. And again, you see all of the major generators in Rochester are within a quarter mile of a bus route. We mapped activity. We did boarding and alighting counts. Where are people getting on and off the bus? And when you see that, you see that there are very few areas where there's just very little ridership. And we use this to really do our route design to see where it might make sense to add more service and where it might make sense to cut some routes. We looked at each individual route. We created these route profiles where we looked at the ridership along the route, but we also looked at ridership by time of day to see how many people are using the bus, when they're using it, to see if there are areas where the buses are overcrowded and really where the buses aren't utilized. We looked at some of the productivity measures, and we did this for most of our major service indicators to see how the routes are performing compared to the system average. What you're seeing is a lot of greens here. The greens mean that the routes are meeting the targets. Reds are really where they're missing the target by a significant margin. We looked at it across the board to give each route a score, and you found very few routes that are really in that red category. So what overall issues did we find? We found that people want to review how the system is oriented. A lot of people mentioned feel it's too downtown oriented. How are we going to get around the town as a whole? We want to improve the route efficiencies. We want to make sure every place that needs to be served is served. We need to meet development, both current and planned. Park and ride, we know park and rides are overcrowded in some places, in some portions of the state. And there are actually gaps in the park and ride system. You know, this is a very important system that's capturing commuters before they even enter Rochester. We want to make sure that we're using ITS as best as possible to try to improve customer information, improve route running times, and better coordinate with signal systems and overall fare payments. ITS is a huge suite of improvements that can be done. And we want to make the system legible. Today's system, people understand it. The regular users understand it, but if you're new to Rochester, it is confusing. So we want to make sure that it's a system that when you're coming into Rochester, we know there are a lot of people that are going to be moving into Rochester. When you come here, you're going to be able to learn the system pretty quickly. We won't have a major learning curve. What that means is routes would go back and forth on the same street. We're seeing routes that are not overly circuitous, so people can understand them, and routes that do the same thing throughout the day, not different variations that are during rush hour versus midday versus weekend versus Saturday. Looking at the park and rides, what we found is a lot of the park and rides are very close to capacity, if not over capacity, but we also have that gap in the system. If you're coming in from the west on Highway 14, you don't have access to a park and ride. So you almost get into town, and then you have to go away from downtown to get to a park and ride. So we think there needs to be established a park and ride there. We know that the usage of park and ride is very tied to downtown employment. People are going to use those park and rides instead of driving to downtown because A, they can't get a spot unless they have a lot of seniority, or B, it's just very expensive. So the park and ride is an attractive alternative. So we know we need to phase the implementation of park and ride and expand current park and rides to meet the demand. So getting into the service plan here, We are talking about a very comprehensive redesign of the RPT system. We know that it's going to take some time to implement. This is a 5-year plan, so we're not going to snap our fingers and say, this is tomorrow's system. We know we need at least a year to do that. So we're going to be starting the implementation of the redesign in year two. In year one, we're going to be looking at trying to make some minor improvements and tweaks to the system to try to get to provide a system that has advertised. That means buses are running on time. They're not passing up passengers because they're too full. But I want to. What I'm showing here on your left side is a nomenclature system for the future system. Now, the current system was designed based on a clock, with Route 1 at the top of Rochester going north out of downtown, Route 6 going due south out of downtown. This builds upon that, but changes all the route numbers. Instead of being based on a clock, we are going that clockwise around. So we have routes in the 10 series, 10 through 19, in the northeast area. The southeast quadrant would be routes 20. Going due south would be 30. Routes that are southwest are 40, and so on. We have introduced our new crosstowns, which will be in the 90 series. And not to forget that the directs, our Park and Ride Express routes, are part of the corridor that they serve. So they would still have the prefix number of the area of the city they're serving, but they will either end on the 7 or 9. For example, your Shopko North direct route, which is today called the 1D, under this plan it would be called the 19 because it's North Broadway, northeast part of the city, and it's the direct. So here's some of the background. We'll have our primary route network. It will operate from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Those are all of our local routes. No, this is 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. on weekdays. This is actually an extension of the span. Today, the local services end roughly around 6 p.m. Then the night routes kick in, and those will go from 7 a.m. It will operate until 11 p.m. It'll be only select routes, but they will not be different routes. They will be the same routes that they operate during the day. We will also be introducing Sunday service. And both Saturday and Sunday service will operate from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Today, the Saturday routes are routes that are numbered in the 20s. So it's a completely different route network on Saturday versus the weekday. What we are proposing here is to have certain routes in our primary transit network that will operate during the weekends. And what you're seeing here, this is a list of routes that will be providing the night and night service on weekdays and the weekend service. These are our major routes serving the most popular parts of the city, and they will have their spans extended to serve. So before we look at the individual routes, I just wanted to go into implementation. I sort of hinted at there was interface implementation. Year one, we're going to add about 5 buses and almost about 8,000 service hours just to take the current routes and add throw some resources at them so they're running on time and they're not overcrowded. Then in year two, we're going to really dig down and do this do most of the service redesigns. Year three, we're going to tweak a little bit. There's one area that we want to wait till year three to implement, and that's today's current Route 8. This is the area due west of the city along Country Club, and we're going to restructure that area. Then in year three, we're also planning on adding one of our 2 new crosstown routes. In year four, we'll add the second crosstown route, assuming that the first crosstown route performs. And then year five, we're going to enhance the crosstowns, give them additional service, operating them on the weekends. And then while this is a 5-year plan, as I said, not only do we want to set the stage for future growth, but we also want to keep an eye on other developments. Today, there's no service to the airport. The airport is really, as a generator, needs to grow. There's a lot of growth occurring by the airport. There's a few hotels going on, some businesses. So we don't see that as being something that should be served before 5 years, but as the service area grows, as the airport area grows, we can see that the airport would be a generator. BRT, the comp plan, calls for BRT on what they're calling the PTN network, and this is building towards that, and we're fully supportive of putting BRT in this. And then there might be other opportunities for other routes to operate later in the evening and on weekends. The other thing that's not on there is you may even want to consider certain holidays might warrant service. So looking at what it takes to do this network, we're looking at how many vehicles are going to be needed, how many additional vehicles, or vehicles need to be purchased. And that's what we're seeing in each year. Most of our fixed route buses, they have a 12-year lifespan. We're also considering different vehicle types than just your standard regular 40-foot bus. If you go up to the cities, you know, every so often you see a bus that bends in the middle there that has higher capacity. That's one strategy we can use on our busiest routes to increase capacity to help instead of adding just additional buses. The other thing is we could consider smaller buses. Something like the Zips buses could operate in some of the neighborhood areas. And looking at our Zips vehicle requirements, you know, those buses have a shorter lifespan. We have to replace them every 5 years. And we expect service to grow at roughly 3% per year. So we know throughout the life of this plan, we really need to just expand the Zips fleet by really about one bus. And that should be able to address most of the ridership needs. We know we got to consider the facility, the maintenance facility. Right now, there's enough space in the facility to handle some growth, but will it be large enough to handle the entire future fleet? And we think by year three, we're going to be very close to the cap of how many buses could be housed at the current facility. So we know we need to start thinking about expanding that facility. And by year five and beyond, as the system continues to grow, we're going to need more space. We want to consider not just having the downtown transfer center, but in some parts of the community, it may make sense to have additional satellite transfer stations to facilitate transfers outside of downtown for some of these crosstown routes, as well as just some of the park and ride activities. We're going to be looking at bus stop amenities. Where do we need bus stop signs? Where do we need shelters? Where do we need benches? Where do we need heaters at the bus stops? Looking at kind of some of the back office type of functions, dispatch software. Is the current dispatch software for both Zips and for the fixed route meeting the needs? Is the scheduling software meeting the needs? Do we need to upgrade those kind of software packages? Farebox technology, are people going to be paying their fares the same way now as they in the future as they are now? We're seeing a lot of growth in the smart cards as well as pay by cell phone types of technologies. We want to make sure we're on the cutting edge of that. Looking at ITS, I alluded to that before. That is for customer information. That's for reliability of buses. For maintenance, there's a lot of uses for different types of ITS improvements. And everything, including staplers in the office, have a useful life. And we have to make sure that we account for that in our capital plans. Fare policy. So what will the fare structure look like? Right now, you have a very basic fare system. Right now, the base fare is $2. You offer multiple ride tickets. You offer unlimited ride passes. What other things can you be offering? Some parts of the country, specifically Lincoln, Nebraska, they have a low-income bus pass. And that's something that might be considered here. Just the key thing with that is how do you fund it? Sometimes it's funded through social service agencies, but other times it comes from general funding. The other thing is a day pass. You have a lot of day visitors here, or short-term visitors. They may want to use the bus system. Might make sense for a day pass. And then when do we raise fares? Usually we like to keep our fare box recovery at a certain rate, but also year two, we're introducing the major restructuring. Fare changes really are more palatable to people when they're associated with a major improvement. So if we're going to consider changing fares, we would consider that in year two of the plan. All right, so that covers the overall background. And now we're going to go look at the route network. And this is a handy-dandy program that RPT purchased, licensed for web-based, and allowed us through the planning process to really draw routes and modify routes on the fly. And we use this to workshop these routes internally and made these spot modifications to allow changes to the system. One thing I want to stress on how we're going to get to the key corridors is right now we're going to have routes operating on the same corridor. For example, North Broadway. Today you have two routes that are operating, but they leave downtown at the same time. So during rush hour, you have two buses every half hour. So a total of four buses an hour. We're going to be keeping that, but instead of having them leave at the same time, we're going to stagger things. We're going to have, during the rush hour, four times that buses are leaving downtown instead of two. And during the middays, during the off-peak hours, we're going to have two times an hour where buses are waiting, which means not every route goes downtown at the same time. But we're going to be grouping them in such ways that if people are trying to get to a certain part of town, they'll have an opportunity in each time that the buses are coming downtown. They just may not be able to get the front door service. Otherwise, they might have a half-hour wait. So, looking at this route network, I'm going to ask Brian to actually shut off all of the routes. And we're going to put them up one at a time. And so Route 10 is basically our current Route 1. What the benefit of this route is, it is, you know, North Broadway. It is going to still serve Shopko North as it does today. The funny face on that is due to a little bit of new service territory, including service to the Public Works Yard, where passengers are going to be able to buy the bus passes. They don't have access to that yard today. We go into Route 12. Route 12 is that second route serving that North Broadway corridor that brings you to the Century High School area. These two routes would be staggered, so you're not having two buses leaving at the same time. You'll have a Route 1 leaving at 0:30 past the hour during the rush hours, and Route 2 leaving 15:45 past the hours. So we're really setting that stage for that frequent service along North Broadway. And we fill that in. We have a neighborhood route, this Route 15, serving that northeast quadrant. Route 16 further fills in, serving the Viola Drive area, and also getting into Century High School. And then you have 19, which is today's One Direct. That's Park and Ride Express route. Route 22 is a modification of today's Route 3, going out 3rd to serve the Technical College, but it's also going to serve some neighborhoods that have grown up a little bit east of the college. Route 24 is basically today's Route 4. It's the 4 midday, but providing a loop out in the southeast. And this is starting to go south, today's Route 5, with a little modification. This is our Fairgrounds Express direct route. 31 and bunch put 32 up as well. So this is our South Broadway services. Again, these like North Broadway, they're staggered. They're creating a frequent service in the South Broadway corridor. And this is this is the wrong route that doesn't meet my. Let's have our park and ride direct routes end in a 9. This is the Route 37, which is the Fairgrounds lot direct route. And the reason why it doesn't meet that is because we already have a 39. That's also in the same corridor. So that's the 39 going from Target South into downtown. Mm-hmm. This is our new Route 42, which will actually provide service to the History Center, serve new territory that is currently not on the RPT system. Route 44. This is also a very southwest oriented. This is similar to an existing route, I forget the number, I'm just 14, that actually only has a couple of rush hour trips. We're going to make that a fairly regular route. Route 52 and then 54. This is our country club area. These two routes together will be implemented in year three. This is the routes that they will not be restructured immediately, but by year three, this route will be in. We'll have something similar to the current Route 8 in place when we do the restructuring. All right, Route 59. I mentioned there's a hole in the park and run network. We're assuming that maybe not even year two, but sometime after this plan, we're going to have a park and ride somewhere near in the vicinity of West Circle Drive and Highway 14, and that will require a new direct route. Route 62. This focuses on getting a new northwest transfer facility in the vicinity of IBM or Target North. IBM is already a major parking ride, so we want to make sure we have all-day service there. But this also is kind of our beginnings of any kind of Valley High, I wouldn't say BRT route, but major corridor route. And 64 is also kind of serving our Valley High corridor and bringing you to that northwest transfer point. Before I go on, we do envision a transfer point here at Target South as well. Where there's a park and ride, we can see that as possibly even a staging area for any kind of future service to the airport, or at least some of the neighborhoods in the vicinity of the airport. But going on, we have our Route 65, which is basically today's 19. It serves that far northwest part of the city and goes straight on the highway into town. This is our IBM park and ride direct route. And then going into our 70 series, these are kind of our center north services. These are based on really what are some of the strongest performing routes today. The 72, the 73 is basically almost a mirror of our current 19, serving the east side of the far north of the city, east of 52. And 74 is our mirror here in the middle of the city. That's, again, based on one of our strongest routes. And then, why don't we turn everything off before we show these two? I talked about crosstown routes, and the reason why I'm asking Brian to turn everything off is so we can see these two crosstown routes without any concern. Oh, this is the, you know what? This is the older version.
Yeah, this is year five too. This is the full build out.
Okay. So this is our full loop crosstown. But we would do that in phases. And our phases would be kind of starting at the northeast, going to IBM, passing Walmart, passing Shopko. And then our second phase would be a completely separate route. Starting at over by the athletic fields over at RCTC, and then not dipping down here, we actually decided that this dip on the bottom that makes it look a little bit like Texas will not be in there, and it'll go straight to Apache Mall and to the TJ Maxx area. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, we see this possibly even becoming a full circle route, assuming the service is pretty successful. Mm-hmm. So that is what we're envisioning for over the next 5 years for PT. And again, we're going to be bringing this to the public this week. We shared it with most of the drivers this morning, and it was well received by them. And we'd love to see what the public's going to say about that.
All right. I have one question or comment to kind of get it started. I appreciate the comprehensiveness. I mean, you're looking at routes and fares and map metrics and capacity. The one thing that strikes me as you were going through your presentation is the implementation plan seems far too long. I mean, we're talking year 3, 4, and 5 before I can get an airport route or a crosstown. We can't do that much faster. That really strikes me. And I don't know if that hits anybody else, but that one seemed really, I like the comprehensiveness, but it just seemed like a way too exceedingly long implementation plan.
Yeah. And what goes into implementation of such a system, and why things have to be phased and timed in such a way, is that it actually takes quite a bit of time to purchase buses, to hire operators, to train them, to familiarize them, and in some cases, once we get to a certain point, to build that expansion to the maintenance facility. So we want to make sure that we don't promise a service that's going to be on the street and not be able to deliver it because we don't have enough buses. We don't have enough drivers. We want to make sure it's phased in such a way that we can build up to the future.
Well, I think one thing that bothers me is in 5 years' time, we're going to add another 10, 15,000 more people to our population. You're never going to catch up. You've got to be a little bit more. I'll stop there and let others chime in. So, Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, so maybe I was looking at it a little bit differently. I mean, in 5 years, it looks like from the numbers you presented, we're increasing our buses and our route hours by a third. So I've heard a lot about how we're going to expand and get this extra capacity. What's the plan to promote it and get the ridership to support this?
One thing you're very lucky here in Rochester is you come in with a very strong ridership base as is, with your major employers pushing people onto transit. That being said, we also think that a comprehensive marketing plan will be needed and will be done as the framework will be done as part of our TDP process. The route network on itself, compared to today, the fact that it won't be as circuitous, as confusing, we think is going to help sell the system. It'll be very user friendly, and that's just going to be the starts right there.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Bilderback, I'm sorry.
Are you going to continue to monitor the routes like you have now to figure out where the routes are to see which ones are going to be productive and how much time are you giving them in this type of monitoring?
I'm assuming now that that RPT does have a planner on staff, that's one of the major roles is to monitor ridership, to monitor on-time performance, customer comments, and monitoring routes is a frequent, ongoing thing of any transit system. So we'll make sure that the routes are performing as they're expected, and when they're not, actions to take to improve.
Are you working with the school system as well to see time-wise?
We are actually. The school system has approached RPT to see how the transit network can better mesh with their school times and the school transportation needs.
Mr. Woodjack?
So, help me out here. About 5 years would be pretty close to the implementation phase for the circulator. And just curious if we're looking at doing some sort of a prototyping of a circulator with a bus, or how do we make that transition? Because this is still a very downtown-centric
yes.
model, and as soon as you have a circulator, you probably don't have nearly as downtown-centric a model.
Well, one thing about RPT, it's always going to be very downtown-centric just by the nature of the activity in downtown.
Mm-hmm.
This does introduce that extra dynamic, and we are implementing that in phases just to see not only its impact will be generating enough ridership on its own, but also to see what the impact will be on other routes. Is it going to change enough of the dynamic that people are going to be riding out versus in to get to the circulator?
Mr. Campion.
Should we test that early on? That sort of hypothesis you just laid out sounds like it's testable. I'm just wondering if this is something that we should test before we set out some of these routes, because Matt, you sound somewhat skeptical, and I've heard other people with different opinions about whether or not the system can be shifted away, but I also hear a lot of demand for some of those routes, and specifically moving laterally or across the northern half of the city, I think is something I've heard a lot of requests for. So I'm just, how do we start to build that confidence?
Well, we build that in by implementing implementing it on a trial basis, and we are planning on implementing that pretty much in three pieces. So we're going to start with just that northern piece going between Mayo Northeast and IBM, serving a lot of those key generators such as Shopko and Walmart up there and the Target. But we don't move forward with the next phase until we're really happy with how the first phase is performing.
Mr. Ruska.
Stuart, thank you for a very thorough presentation, good information. One of the things that kind of tag on Council Member Bilderbach's comments about some of the unmet, some of the measuring the usage. I notice you have the highest, you mentioned the highest unmet needs are at weekends and evenings, and then you had an activity map that seems effective in tracking that. But you also had the table, and there's some real areas there that just weren't very active. And so, how long do you guys give that to before you look at it and say, This isn't working, or do you just let it keep going along until it finally catches on? Or how often do you kind of review that to determine, you know, where are we being the most effective and where do we just need to maybe go a different direction?
Right. Usually after 9 months, we have a very good idea of how a route is going to be doing. If it's completely dead, and not meeting any needs, if it has some strength in some parts, or if it's doing gangbusters. So you give it a 9-month trial. You know, some people might even say a year and a half. A lot of places they have a specific guideline on how long you test a route, but you can usually see those patterns emerge in 9 months. That doesn't mean you A, keep the route, or B, sometimes you want to use these guidelines more to ask questions than to make decisions, and then use the answers to those questions to make the decisions. Why isn't this route performing? Well, we've got a ton of people getting on here, and they're only going a very short distance. Or it's just shy of where people are wanting to go. There's that new Shopko opening up just 1 mile past the end of the route. Or there's a new medical office, and they're just not able to get there, so they're not using the route. So you want to, after 9 months, really start asking those questions. What's driving this route or not driving the route?
Mr. Bilderbach?
I'm pleased to see that you're extending the time for the routes and starting them earlier, but that still doesn't cover necessarily our second, third shift people trying to get home from work or trying to get to work. Are you working, have you talked to our employers who are doing the three shifts work shift time to make sure that we're covering that, or is there a way that we can look at how to get a bus maybe at the beginning or just before that second shift ends, as well as the third shift begins? Have we talked about that with our...
We did talk to a number of the major employers here, and while we think that this is just the beginning, this 11 p.m. span, we think eventually that will probably have to grow even further. It's, as the employment continues to grow, as the parking crunch gets more and more of these services are going to be needed. This is really our bridge for the next 5 years. And we've heard from a lot of these employers that really once you get past a certain time of the day, that parking crunch is less of an issue. We really need these services for people who are on the first shift.
I mean, that may be true for those who have vehicles,
yes.
But for those who don't, and who are dependent on this to get a job. Is there anything you're looking at that way?
The other thing is to partner with some of the for-hire vehicle industry. Something we are looking at as part of the study is what are those opportunities for maybe a guaranteed ride-home program using some of the for-hire vehicle operators, or even just some of those span enhancements that, frankly, will not be very efficient with a bus, but that doesn't mean the mobility need is not there.
Mr. Freeze had a comment?
Yeah, just in regard to that. So as we get later into the evening and even the early morning, but more predominantly later in the evening, we will have to start looking at alternatives to the fixed route system. So flex routes are something that other communities use. So they actually maybe combine two or three routes in the evening based on where the riders that choose to take transit live. So you kind of do a deviation or flex off the fixed route. So other communities have done this. AECOM has worked with some of those. We'll continue to look at those things as in addition to what Stuart mentioned. It's going to be very hard to substantiate and justify the entire fixed route system running till 11 p.m., 12 p.m., 1 a.m. at night. So we're going to have to start looking at alternatives.
So talk to me about how the fare structure and the levy impact would compare presently to year one to year five. Because I think we got to pay for it, right?
Right, we've got to pay for it. And one thing we're very lucky about is our funding partners up in St. Paul are very interested in the Greater Minnesota Systems expanding service, expanding their hours, and they are coming to the table with some funding. And so I can give you cost figures, but that really doesn't give you a whole picture since the levy only pays for a portion of the service. You have fares that are roughly 20% of the additional cost.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually, by year five, I projected that costs of the entire system really increased by 60%. Yes, that's a significant mm-hmm. amount, but it's also a significant amount of yeah. service that's
yep.
being added, as well as our regular inflationary mm-hmm. cost increases. So of that, you can expect, and that difference is roughly about $4 million.
$4 million levy-wise?
That's not levy-wise.
Okay.
that's if you think about that, I have to take a look at exactly what percent is paid from the levy, but you figure about 20% comes from fares.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly about half of that is comes from the state and federal sources. So talking at most about 30% of that.
Well, and it's not that I'm not willing to pay for the transit system that the community needs, but I would like you to take that as an action item as this goes forward, that I want to see that financial contribution layout each year.
Yes, and one of our next steps for this, before this becomes a final plan, is a full financial plan that lays out exactly what dollars are coming from where and what is necessary for them.
And the fare structure is intended to stay the same?
Fare structures tend to stay the same. We anticipate that we might look at fare modifications
when
we're doing the redesign of the system. It'll still just keep it more or less around the 20% mark, but it'll make sure that we're not falling short on the fare.
And then with the fare modifications, we've had a lot of requests for some of the social service agencies that rely on transit. I mean, they're going to be spending the same amount either way, but they want to get, reduce the amount so they can get some more tickets for what they're doing. Is that the kind of stuff that you're looking at?
We're looking at what are social service agencies and employers who are purchasing passes from RPT, what they're paying for, and if there is a way, a method, to make sure that each group, since they are buying in bulk, what kind of discount should be offered.
All right, I have Ms. Means, then the mayor.
You're working on expanding your hours, which is very, very, very good to accommodate many of the people that would like to use the public transportation. But you also mentioned about the park and rides, how they're getting so full. Are you anticipating that with the expanded routes that will be less of a need in the future to find another resource for the park and rides?
No, we don't, because a lot of the park and rides are being used by longer distance commuters, and that market is also expected to grow. So with the growth in employment here in Rochester, you do need both the local service as well as the park and rides to manage the amount of vehicles coming in and manage.
I was thinking specifically about Walmart, closing down that opportunity to use some of their space. And so I don't know how the other big box stores or other large businesses are handling that, are receptive to the park and ride, but are you planning to have additional land, or how do you plan to accommodate that need?
We are exploring who we can partner with for park and ride, but we're also exploring if it makes sense to have city-owned park and ride lots where the city is in control of the destiny of the park and ride usage, because with your Walmarts, with Shopko and Targets, you have a lease with these organizations, and they can decide that they do not want you there and terminate the lease with proper notification, of course.
All right, Mr. Mayor.
Has your study take into consideration what type of buses we might be having in the future?
Absolutely.
We went, you know, we kind of delayed or avoided the CNG and then electric.
Well, in turn, well, we're looking at, you know, what size vehicle, but also when you look at what kind of fuel you might want to use. You know, right now, things are emerging rapidly. You may want to wait till you have a real bulk order. And some specifically, you look at some of the zero emission buses that are out there. If actually, if you go across to Convention Center, I think the providers are here as part of the State Public Transit Conference and have demonstrators. You might see what is the future going to be. We don't want to commit you to a technology today that in 5 years is going to be outdated. So we really want, you know, diesel buses are, they may not be the cleanest buses, but we don't want to commit you to completely changing your facility for a fuel type that may not be, in 5 years might not be the right type.
All right, I have Mr. Vilbenbach, Wojcik, and Campion, and then I'd like to wrap up this topic for today so we can kind of move on. Mr. Vilbenbach?
Could you tell everybody here the times and locations of the transit meetings?
They are going to be, yeah. Brian, you have my handy? I want to set them up. Do we want to maybe? But they are, I believe, until about 4 to 7 p.m. tonight, tomorrow night, Thursday night, and I believe it's next Tuesday.
Here's the schedule.
So tonight we're at John Marshall High School from 4:30 to 7. Tomorrow night we're at Mayo High School from 4:30 to 7. On Thursday night, on Wednesday night, I'm sorry, we're at Century High School from 4:30 to 7. And then Thursday night we're in this room from 5 to 7. And then next week, on Tuesday, we are at Bamber Valley Elementary School, again, from 4:30 to 7.
Okay, Mr. Wojcik?
So I'm just curious about the interaction now between you and the planning department, because you talked about the possibility of city-owned lots, and ideally that we want to create transit nodes around those, transit-oriented development around those. Are we going to, as we come up with those destinations, have the appropriate zoning restrictions and plans in place to make sure that we utilize those sites?
At this point in this study, we're going to be identifying some of the potential locations, and then from that we would go to planning to see if the zone makes these possible or what kind of variance may be needed or if it's flat out off the table.
Mm-hmm. I can address it too. Well, we've been working at identifying some potential future more permanent park and ride locations, and with that, the intent would be where possible, where they strategically work to align those with a node, a future node, that that's where they would be located. Not all of them will align with the future node, but in those locations where future nodes are identified, we need to have proper zoning that would allow and facilitate more compact development that is more transit oriented. Those are policies we don't currently have in our office, and that's what we need to develop those.
Okay, Mr. Campy.
It seemed like you were about to address the technology shift and the fuel shift, but then I don't know if you walked it back or you decided you didn't want to engage. I'm just wondering, is there anything in this proposal that will be able to be leveraged to help make that decision?
There might be. We're going to be looking more at vehicle size, but we will look at to see if the capital investment, what the capital investment would be to change to, let's say, a CNG facility, to see if it's something we want to leverage, or really we're moving more towards the zero emission buses to see what kind of charging stations are needed and where, to see if that's the technology that makes sense.
If I may, I think it would be incredibly valuable to have you guys weigh in that regard, because I think it is imperative that we have some sort of as objective as possible evaluation of the technology options that are out there, and maybe with regards to specifically the monetary outlay that would be involved, I think that'd be really a valuable component of this plan coming back.
Okay, well, thank you. We've got the public hearings or commentary periods coming up here. When can we expect to see the final report?
We're looking to wrap up the entire study and either end of this calendar year, beginning of next year. December, January timeframe.
All right. Okay, well, thank you. We look forward to that. Moving on to, we'll continue at the top of our agenda, which is a review of the PNC draft ordinance. Mr. Reed, do you want to kick this off? Or we have three attachments in our packet. One, I believe, if I've got this right, is the St. Paul ordinance, although it's been tweaked a little bit by city attorney with some changes that would make it appropriate for Rochester. Then the current taxicab ordinance was attached. And then finally, actually, Uber provided some commentary. Apparently, they would like to see changes even in the existing St. Paul ordinance, so it doesn't stand without some change. So, Mr. Reeves, you want to?
Yeah, it is slightly confusing, but basically, the first attachment is the St. Paul ordinance, which is what we use for a base that the city attorney modified to fit our ordinance standards, and he also provided comments about what he would propose changing, strictly based on, not on content, but just on structure. The second one, obviously, the taxicab ordinance, and then the third one is that Uber did submit to us a copy of the St. Paul ordinance with their proposed edits, saying that they don't really like that ordinance, and they would prefer to see it amended the way they have it. And then in addition, we did forward on to the council an email that was sent to some of the council members that had some comments on it, as well as attached the Moorhead ordinance, which Uber would prefer to see us adopt some version of the Moorhead ordinance over anything else. So I apologize. I mean, there's a lot of ordinances kind of floating out there, but at the same time, when we had the city attorney prepare this, he wasn't really basing it off of what Uber requested. It was more taking probably the more established ordinance in the state, which is St. Paul's, and moving that forward, which would seem to kind of meet possibly what the council would like to consider. Things have changed a little bit since then with Uber's weighing in on what they would like to see happen. So, really, it's more now what we kind of want to see happen with all this. And one thing I should note with all of it is that actually just today it looked like in the Star Tribune they were talking about the Metropolitan Airport Commission had finally done their updating to allow for the TNCs to operate a little more freely at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. We will need to do something if we decide to move forward with any ordinance, we will need to do something in that ordinance to address how they operate at the airport. Generally, there are additional requirements for airport operation. With that, there's usually additional fee to operate at the airport. And just to kind of revert back a little bit to earlier when we were talking to Uber, basically, they can look at their software and see when people pull up their app in Rochester to see if we have Uber or not. About 90% of those pull-ups were at the airport. Mm-hmm. So clearly, that's our main, at least from what we've seen so far, the main need for it. So if we're going to do that, we will have to do something in our ordinance to address how we're going to accommodate allowing them at the airport or not.
Now, Minneapolis and St. Paul are just moved to allow them at their airports, at the Bloomington Airport, right?
Yes. They were allowing drop-off before, but not pick-up, and now they're kind of moving
that. Okay. I have Mr. Campy and then Mr. Hickey.
Just the blue one looked to me like it was, when I read through this, looked like it was a preliminary one. So I was just wondering, when you gave it a read-through, can you summarize the differences that Uber was looking for in that blue one, or would you prefer not to?
Well,
basically, I prefer you would.
Yeah. Honestly, basically, they fixed some definition things, and then they also clarified. St. Paul adopted their ordinance fairly early. Since then, some state statute has been adopted that addressed insurance requirements on a kind of a blanket for all TNCs in Minnesota. So really, they made the changes to reflect that statutory changes, but then they also did make some more. St. Paul had a fairly restrictive ordinance that talked about they have to have some sort of physical office space close to the city. They have to have the availability for the city when requested to be able to review their files and documents on drivers and things like that. And they did make some changes to that. If you look at, say, the Moorhead ordinance as a comparison, most of those things are not in there. And when I've talked with the city of Moorhead about the process they've gone through with this, they initially did have some of those requirements in there. Uber said they would not operate on any that kind of structure in their city, so they did end up removing those. So some of the changes are just simple definitions. Some are to meet statute, but some are lessening the details and requirements in the St. Paul ordinance for sure.
Mr. Hickey?
That might answer my question. I was going to ask, so we've got the modified St. Paul ordinance, we've got the current tax cap ordinance, we've got the markup of the St. Paul, then we also have the Moorhead. So are we going to be discussing the Moorhead at all, or is that just background information?
That would be Uber's request that we use that ordinance.
Yeah,
but that's, again, up to the council to decide which one he wants to focus on.
Moorhead's not having any problems, are they? I haven't heard anything.
No, I mean, I've only had a few conversations, and actually I just went out to check a voicemail. I missed trying to connect over the last week here with some of their staff to have some conversation with it. They just haven't had really a lot of activity out of it. Early on, I think, which had been late last year, early this year, they had a larger number of Uber drivers in the Fargo-Moorhead area. But then I think it was either early this year, towards the end of last year, Uber adjusted their rates. And it basically cut a lot of the income that these drivers are seeing by almost a third or more. So they've seen a lot less drivers now because it's not as lucrative as it used to be for them. So, you know, they said they haven't had any really issues, but what they've seen in Fargo is that to try to deal with this issue, they did make a lot of changes to their taxicab ordinance to try to level the playing field. And what they're now seeing in Fargo is what they're kind of calling unlicensed cabs, because there really isn't much requirement anymore as far as like number of cabs and those sort of things in their ordinance. So they've been getting more complaints that somebody's just waiting outside the Fargo dome to pick them up, and really they're not a licensed taxi cab, but because there's not some of the requirements that used to be in their ordinance that it would address things like uniform cab colors and, you know, some of the things that you kind of expect when you get a taxi, you're going to see something like that. Because Fargo did make a bunch of changes in their ordinance to try to level that playing field, and they allowed Uber to come in, they are starting to get some of those complaints. How big of an issue that really is, I don't know. I just know that if you do just a basic Google search on the Fargo-Moorhead Uber situation, you'll see some of those things kind of come up as what they're trying to work through now, and they haven't found an answer yet, but they are taking a look at that issue where they're having trouble with people not knowing for sure if it's really a licensed taxi cab or what it is.
Okay, Mr. Bilderbeck.
Couple questions. Number one, I'm curious about on 95B.05, it talks about they have to have a business within 12 miles of City Hall.
And that's one of the ones that was in the St. Paul ordinance that if you look at the Uber edit of the St. Paul ordinance, that's no longer there. They removed that. But St. Paul did have that in there.
I was going to say, why would we do that?
Exactly.
We just took the St. Paul ordinance as a basis.
I mean, in fact,
editorializing it.
Now the part people in Rochester, not all would be allowed to do Uber because this city, you look at the size of it, there's no way every business could be within 12 miles.
Uber.
Right.
Uber has to be.
But that's, to me, it's crazy when each of these groups are basically running independent. AT, the comments, the AT is from whom?
Terry
Atkins' comments?
Yes. Okay.
Mr. Hickey?
So St. Paul, I mean, that's their adopted ordinance, so that's what they have right now. So Uber is operating in St. Paul with that restriction. They have a physical location there?
They must. I mean, that is the ordinance they're operating under right now. Yes.
Okay. All right.
And I did ask why St. Paul hasn't amended it, just as far as statutory requirements and things. And basically, the way St. Paul looks at it is that if it's a statutory requirement, it's going to overrule their ordinance anyway, so there's no need to reopen this back up. And they're just operating under this ordinance right now.
Mr. Ruskin.
I guess I'm open to looking at this, but I don't know that I want Uber telling us what ordinance to use. We put a lot of work into our ordinance, and I think we're capable of trying to construct something with the input of some of the other cities to come up with something that works for our city. So, you know, we asked Uber to come talk to us, and they didn't do it. Now they're telling us which ordinance to use. So I think I want to create some balance there a little bit and try to create something that we can apply to our city that works and makes some sense for everybody.
Mr. Wojcik and Mr. Bilbeck.
Well, I'm quite certain there's nobody in this room that's going to make Uber any better or more successful than they've already been with the hundreds of millions of people that they serve. And, you know, the St. Paul ordinance, I have no issue looking at either St. Paul or Moorhead. Fargo-Moorhead is more similar to Rochester, certainly, than St. Paul is. I mean, at Minneapolis, I think they have an ordinance as well that doesn't have a lot of those St. Paul restrictions on there. But I mean, I have no interest in doing silly stuff for the sake of doing silly stuff. You know, requiring Uber to have an office within 12 miles of City Hall is just plain ridiculous. We'll end up like the food truck ordinance where we overregulate it so much that it hurts the ability for people to actually succeed.
Mr. Bilderbeck.
Yeah, my feeling is I don't really care which one we do, but I think we need to decide here which one we want to start working from. I think that would help speed the process up. if we at least chose one to start working on. I just think sitting here with all these other things, because then whatever we do, we also need to address the taxi cab ordinance, and I'm sure that's why you attached it. But that needs to be looked at, too, to make that a fair level playing field as well.
Right, and that is the reason we did include that. And generally speaking, when you see this happen, the cities, as I mentioned with Fargo, I mean, you do then have to take a look at your tax cap ordinance and try to figure out, is there things that we should be changing in this to try to keep as close to a level playing field as possible? I mean, there's no way you can make it exactly equal, but, you know, there are, when you look at our taxi cab ordinance compared to any of the examples that you see, we have much more restrictions and requirements and fees and things like that involved for the taxi cab franchises than we do in any of these proposed TNC ordinances.
Mr. Ruskin?
I was just going to say, I agree with Councilmember Bilbeck, but we kind of did pick St. Paul as the one we were going to work on, and now we're kind of throwing, that's originally the one that we, that's why it's in here originally, right? We talked about bringing that one forward, and now the Moorhead one has just been kind of thrown out here now because...
Yeah, I mean, I think back in April, I did a memo in April, I think, when we talked about TNC ordinances, and we talked about Minneapolis-St. Paul. I did a comparison of the two.
Right.
I highlighted the differences between them all, and basically I just said St. Paul seems to be the most detailed, so if we're going to move forward, this seems to be one to work off of. But again, you know, I'm not making a recommendation on any of these.
Yeah.
I'm just saying here's basically what's out there. You know, and really in Minnesota there's three. You know, there's Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Moorhead. So pick one that you'd like to work off of, and we can go with it. We went with the one we felt was the most established one.
Mr. Wojcik?
My whole thing is that I want this to be successful. The goal here is to bring TNCs to Rochester, and I don't have a preference necessarily which ordinance that is that we work from, but... you know, the idea here is not to make it difficult for Uber to be here. The goal here is to make it easy for Uber and similar companies to be here.
Mr. Bilbeck? Yeah, and I'm not arguing. I think that makes sense, but I think we need to figure one out, and then we can start looking at that and saying what does, what doesn't make sense in that ordinance. And that's why I'm saying let's just pick one. We can work off that, and we can throw out some of the things that we just feel have no reason to be there at all, but then it also gives the opportunity to look at the cab ordinance, make sure that we clean that up as well.
Mr. Campion.
I agree with Councilman Wojcik about working toward something that enables the functionality. The third attachment here that starts on page 33 is the St. Paul ordinance, and they said the St. Paul ordinance with their changes would be acceptable.
If we were going to move forward with the St. Paul ordinance, these are the changes that they would like to see. And yes, my assumption would be that means it's acceptable if we look at those amendments.
I'm perfectly fine moving forward with that. Is the start of this process, and we can start reviewing those specific changes that they've laid out. I think they have done basically what we would have asked of them anyway, was hand them the St. Paul ordinance and say, what's the roadblocks here?
Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, I think we just need to look at both, and we just have to make sure they make change, you know, make sense. You know, that's what Uber wants. We have to do what's best for the city.
Oh, so. Always. I totally agree with that.
Mr. Ruskin?
No, I'm good.
Oh,
Mr. Bilbeck.
The only problem I have with looking at both of them is that just going to delay and drag this out. I would just assume that we pick one, start working with that one ordinance, whichever one it is, work with one, so we can try to get that formulated versus trying to play with two of them.
Mr. Wojcik?
One thing I want to see if the council agrees with me on this, but I have no intention of putting any fees in place that are punitive towards these companies for the sake of being punitive to try and level the playing field per se. I expect that we have fees that cover our cost of providing what services it is to cost, but I don't believe we should be putting these fees in place to make it more difficult for these companies to operate here, and I just want to know if everyone's on board with that or I'm out on my own.
Mr. Gosling?
Well, I just have one question, and that's that we just recently added fees that have to be paid at the airport.
Yep.
Is that something that would
apply? Oh, that's, yeah, and that's what they're doing up in the Twin Cities, too, is you cross whatever line and the fee gets added.
Mr. Bilbeck. I think what Mr. Wojcik is saying is he just doesn't want to see additional fees added on top of this, puts it in an unfair playing field.
Well, or even just, you know, some of the services that we provide for cab companies, this is a different business model. And the key thing is we should put the fees in place to cover the cost of what we need to do. But we're not going to, I don't think we should be going down that road of saying, well, it's more expensive to run a taxi cab company, therefore we're going to add these fees to try and level things out.
Mr. Hickey, I'm not sure what kind of fees we're talking about. I mean, in principle, it makes sense, but I'm not sure what we're talking about.
Mr. Campion.
So I think I appreciate the drive to work off a single copy. So I would say let's work from the St. Paul copy that has the blue the blue line. No, the blue line is the St. Paul.
That's the Uber St. Paul.
Uber version. Okay, I'm going to refer to it as the Uber St. Paul version. And then if there are Moorhead things that you see that you want to be included or things you don't want to be included, then I would say raise those as individual issues.
Yeah, I would say start with the St. Paul ordinance as the base. If we're really not going to go back and forth, and because that's St. Paul's got everything. The other one's got a lot of strikeouts. So start with the most comprehensive, and then as it makes sense, we'll delete.
It's just that we're going to have to cover each one anyway, because people are going to come back and suggest that the changes that Uber has requested be included. So it's just another way to tackle starting with that particular instance that has all the changes that Uber's already suggested, right?
I'd start with that.
So I would suggest we could start with the St. Paul ordinance. That's what we ask staff to do. It does seem to be the most comprehensive of the ones we know about. And then we've already got a bit of a marked up copy from the city attorney's office. We could add in the marked up changes that Uber has suggested. At least then we're working with one marked up draft and then start whittling it down. Mm-hmm. Mr. Wojak.
Can we, one of the things too, and I'm going to bring this up later with the preservation hearing, but what I'd like to do is we should hear from the public on these, but these are not our traditional legally required public hearings. And I think this is just a fantastic thing to like take the fourth Monday of the month at 7:00 and schedule a hearing for this, and it's recorded. And the big advantage is that people who want to talk about this topic, then they can come in and talk about this topic and not have to worry about waiting till 11:45 to speak.
Mr. Hickey, isn't that already on the consent agenda tonight?
Yes. For the preservation one, it is. To schedule one, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Ruskin?
I guess I'm not too excited about changing it to a different night. We've had long nights, and some nights there might not be much of anything on the agenda. So our first and third seem like they take care of it. The other thing I'm kind of wondering is, has a taxi, I guess I'd like to have some feedback from our local taxi cab franchises. I haven't heard anything from them, and I don't know if they've been asked anything, and just to kind of get their feedback on it. And I mean, they're organizations that worked hard to get us with our agreement to where we are now, with our policies to where we are now, and I just think allowing them the opportunity to weigh in on this is just the right thing to do.
Mr. Bilderbach?
Yeah, I agree they should, but I also just got this letter today from the DMC, mm-hmm. as we walked in and talked about their thoughts on it, too. It would give us I think that's why scheduling a public hearing is good. Yeah. That way we can hear from everybody who feels they need to have an interested voice in speaking.
Well, and I love that too, because keep it equal there. They can come in and talk when everyone else can talk. We don't need to give them special access or anything, because I got a pretty good feeling where taxi cab companies come down on Uber.
Mr. Campion.
Should we have an ordinance for consideration before we have a public hearing?
And that's a good question, because I was going to ask Mr. Reeves if it's possible to come up with that single marked up draft, St. Paul with the city attorney, with the Uber thing. Just put those in there. Don't make a value judgment. So that we're at least working off one document. Otherwise, it gets way too confusing. So then, to Mr. Campion's question, should we have that document available to the public before the public hearing?
I would think you should.
Yes.
No. Yes, I can.
But it would seem like we could put that together pretty easily. It's just mashing these two things together, Mr. Bilderbach.
And that was my next question then to Mr. Reeves's. What's the period of time that's going to take you to put this together and then to make sure it's published on the website or so that people know where to go to get it?
Sure. It won't take that long to
put together a draft ordinance and kind of pulling the different things together. So that should be a major issue or time-wise. And, you know, if we have the hearing scheduled for the 7th, I think, is our next meeting, we have plenty of time. I mean, we have an extra week in between now with just how the days work out. So we would have plenty of time to get that notice published like we would for, you know, other public hearings and things. So.
Okay.
Plus, we're setting it tonight, so people are going to know about it as well that way.
All right, Mr. Hickey.
I'm actually glad the DMC EDA sent us a letter of support, and the last paragraph reads, "It is our hope that the City of Rochester will move forward with the benefit of the subject matter expertise of the transportation consultants efficiently and deliberately to establish ride-sharing services and safely meeting consumer needs and expectations." Glad to see that they see the value in this as well, and, you know, it's coming.
But embedded in their comment, though, is they're suggesting that we, because this ride share is just a component of a multimodal system, transit system, I think they're suggesting that we would engage our transportation consultant as part of this analysis.
And that would be, I think that they would be very welcome to attend our public hearing.
All right. So it sounds like we're on a track where we can create the one marked up version, so that we can keep ourselves focused, and then probably later this evening we will suggest set a November 7th public hearing date. We'll be able to have that marked up version available to the public and council for review prior to that meeting. Mr. Bilbao?
Is that also, do you have a updated taxi cab one as well?
I don't know if I would update, but I could definitely highlight within our existing ordinances areas that are potentially in conflict with what the TNC ordinance would be allowing. So at least then you could see that these are things that we should maybe consider looking at changing. I'm not sure what the changes. I don't think I'll recommend changes, but I would feel comfortable highlighting the areas that probably should be discussed, and then as a council can decide what changes you want to possibly see.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think we want to get into the language changes. Because, all right. Anything else on that, Mr. Campion?
Can staff contact the DMC EDA and say that they want their transportation, their consultants to weigh in, that they should do so as part of the public hearing, or just submit a letter that can be included in the packet for notification?
They're our consultants.
They're the same consultants, even better. Are they still here?
That's right. I forget all the relationships.
I can't believe you can't keep our consultants straight.
Mr. Ruska.
I guess I'd like to make sure that, you know, from this letter, they obviously want us to engage their transportation consultants, the transportation consultants. They're already working on the transportation studies. I guess I feel a little bit awkward saying, well, you guys are welcome to come to the public hearing. I guess I'd like to see them have some weigh in or some discussion or some input before that point. So,
Richard, you could contact them if that's all right.
Yes.
Well, I think somewhat splitting the difference there, we'll be making this marked up draft available, and I would hope that they could be expeditious in providing some comments and that they would be relatively on track. This is totally wrong. We need to take a different approach. All right. Okay. All right. Moving on to our last topic this afternoon, which is a review of the status of the Bicycle Planning Advisory Committee. Ms. Baker, Mr. Freeze. Now, is this just a change of where BPAC might fall under authority in terms of ROCOG or public work, or is there more to it than that?
There's more to it than that.
All right.
That's up to you, but we are suggesting a little bit more in the way of changes to the way the organizational structure was set up with the town.
So as this group knows, there has been a pedestrian advisory committee under ROCOG since about 2006, and it was initiated primarily because there was a major planning activity underway, and that included developing the Bicycle Master Plan under the ROCOG authority and planning responsibilities. There have not been other major planning initiatives made since that time that have required the ongoing input from an advisory committee. We do see value in having that type of committee within a community, and when we're engaged in planning initiatives and major planning updates, they're a resource for us to go and reach out to. We think there's value in having a committee established for the city. The city is where, by and large, most of the activity around pedestrian use and bicycling occurs. And it's a place where there seems to be the most interest in reviewing and making comment on different policies related to the funding, the operations, and maintenance of those types of facilities. We've developed a proposal for your consideration, and the proposal would include amending the Rochester Code of Ordinances to establish what we're referring to as the Pedestrian and Bicycle Committee. The first page of this draft lays out really some of the background and justification and need for such a committee, speaking to the fact that the community supports increased bicycling and walking for community, for commuting, for general transportation, recreation, and healthy living. That Rochester has been recognized as a bike-friendly community by the League of American Bicyclists. That the community is also recognized as a walk-friendly community. That a safe, connected, and convenient and comfortable network of pedestrian cycling facilities contributes positively overall to quality of life, equity, and health. And increasing walking, biking, and transit access is needed to support the transportation roadship targets set in the Rochester Downtown Master Plan, and also the transportation solutions needed to support the Destination Medical Center initiative. Also speaks to walking and biking trips contribute to energy efficiency, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and better air quality. That walk and bike friendly communities and walk and bike friendliness are key economic drivers for cities of all sizes and strengthen the local economy by attracting business, investment, and skilled workers that have the option to locate anywhere. Virtually every trip includes a pedestrian element to the trip, whether it's the beginning, the end, or the entire trip. And walking is the most common accessible form of transportation and physical activity. And that the community does value safe, accessible pedestrian bike facilities and networks, inclusive and welcoming to all, including walkers, those using strollers, wheelchairs, and mobility aids. And if you turn the page over, what we're suggesting is that the composition of a committee like this include a diverse membership. People who have significant expertise or experience in different areas, making sure that the needs of pedestrians and bicyclists are included, but also different types of cyclists and pedestrians are included. So we're suggesting two members from a community who have expertise or experience in recreational biking, two from biking for transportation, a member representing pedestrians using mobility aids, one member representing the school-aged interests and walking school bus, such as PTSA or somebody from the IDS 35 transportation. Somebody who's a member of regular transit user. Again, the pedestrian biking system is a connecting point to our transit system. A member who represents physical medicine, health, public safety, and somebody who represents sustainability, energy, and transportation, or environmental science. We have some language there for you to consider with the initial establishment of a committee in their initial terms and with a two-year term limit, suggesting that the committee would meet on a quarterly basis and that the purpose, is really to help to inform the city of priorities and needs of different user groups and to be a conduit for users to understand the context of constraints and opportunities for improving systems serving pedestrians and bicyclists. That the committee would serve as a resource of citizens, facility users, and persons experienced in non-motorized transportation to provide input on policy, funding, and design issues as determined by the directors of public works, parks and recreation, or planning. Examples would include capital improvements program, policies related to planning, design, operating, maintaining, or funding. funding the transportation system and recreational trails, grant opportunities, and allocate lunch striking programs, street path and trail projects, and alternative designs. The mission is being suggested for your considerations to provide a forum for users to help inform policies and priorities to ensure a safe and comfortable pedestrian and bicycling system in the city that contributes to the city's motive goals and a culture of active living and equity in transportation, demonstrable of what it means to be America's city's first. So that in a nutshell is really the proposal being put in front of you for consideration of establishing the committee. A couple other things we've put there for your consideration is just that the meeting should be open to the public and subject to the Roberts Rules of Order. That staffing is primarily to be through the Department of Public Works. You'll notice that the departments of Parks and Recreation and Planning are also identified in this language because at different times, our three different departments have different responsibilities and roles in identifying priorities for those different system updates or changes or infrastructure investments. And the other piece for your consideration is, as a matter of practice, it's a good idea to periodically review boards and committees and their purpose and their function. And I would suggest that at least on a five-year cycle, you're reviewing those things and giving consideration as to whether or not the language establishing those committees should change or whether or not they continue to be needed.
Okay. Is that it?
Yes.
All right. Well, one question I had to kind of start off, the way you've numbered it to be section two and subdivisions one and two, a lot of the duties. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. I'm trying to figure out the intent and purpose because oftentimes as we establish boards, committees, we don't set good process or we don't establish what the authorities might be. And as I read some of your language, it says that their intent is to inform the city, to serve as a resource, to provide a forum. So what I don't want to do is set a group up for possible frustration or outright failure if they don't know what their role is and, you know, when do people talk to them and when do they have some influence. You know what I mean? I'm looking for a bit more solidity there, I guess.
Well, we thought that by outlining this as being a quarterly type of meeting, those are opportunities for touching on different points during the year where there might be planning, programming, maintenance issues that could be brought forward. But you'll see on this page three there toward the top, really the suggestion is that they serve as a resource of persons with those experience in non-motorized transportation to provide input on a range of different things, but is determined by the directives of those three departments. Okay, so as needed, as there are issues to bring forward, they would be brought to this.
Okay, Mr. Hickey. So I've got a lot of the same concerns as setting up a separate board and commission as when the Rochester Arts Council came. And so this is an advocacy group, and they can still function that way. That's what they are, an advocacy group. To set them up as a separate board and commission, and the same concerns I had with the Arts Council, growing government with another board and commission, and they can add that advocacy role outside the government.
Mr. Bildebeck, then Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, I guess my feeling is I'm not looking at this as being an additional board. It's just really kind of changing places and redefining where it sits and what they do. I mean, BPAC has been out there for quite some time. And this is just trying to find a home that makes more sense to me. So I don't see this as being adding a new committee or a new commission. I just see it as we're placing it in a new place and we're cleaning up some of the things that were out there as far as definitions and who's going to help support them and what their rules are. I don't see it as an additional committee.
Mr. Wojcik and Ms. Means?
Oh, yes, I have three things to bring up. One, it's critically important to remember the overarching goals of the DMC district, which is the prioritization of pedestrians, then cyclists, then transit, then cars. And that means we have to have the appropriate voices in place because that's what DMC is all about. It's a critical part.
That?
What's that?
Where does it say that?
Just about everyone. You don't think that DMC prioritizes them that way?
I saw the draft design guidelines. Okay. They haven't approved it.
All right. Clearly we disagree on bicycles and pedestrians. I get that. The second thing is that it's critically important that this be in the city because, and not just an advocacy group, because a lot of these decisions get made before the public ever gets a chance to see it. And this gives them the opportunity to weigh in when they can be the most effective. And disagree with the grow in government because, again, the board exists. We're just trying to make them more effective in their current than they currently are. And I think the last thing is it's important that they, they be working with Public Works, but it's important that they be, providing their input, not just on City of Rochester projects, but projects within the urban outline or whatever of Rochester as well, which would include MnDOT and county projects as well. And then I think the only other thing I'd say about this is that those things like the bike-friendly, walk-friendly cities, you don't have this group, you don't have those designations. There's a ton of grants that are out there that if you don't have a group like this, you're not the grants are not necessarily acceptable or accessible to you. So this is something that benefits and and I do strongly support the appropriate prioritization that I think the DMC is pretty solidly behind: pedestrians, bikes, transit, then cars.
One comment you just made though, if you think they should have some involvement in countywide and so forth in non-urban areas, I thought that.
No, I'd said the urban boundaries, which would include the county roads and the MnDOT roads within the city.
Okay, I get that. Yeah. So that would almost argue that they should remain under ROCOG, not city public.
ROCOG has been a disaster, and we both serve on ROCOG. Right. We know that it's not functional in this capacity for. They're not getting BPAC involved. And more importantly, nobody does a project in the city of Rochester without Public Works knowing about what's going on.
No, I realize that, but if they were to have some conversation about county roads and so forth, that's not our authority.
No, it's not, but they're not a decision-making body. They're an advisory body. So this gives them the access to weigh in the same way that our own Public Works Department weighs in on these projects.
All right, others? Mr. Freeze?
So I'll give you a recent example. So last year we presented to you recommendations as it relates to the South and North Broadway corridor plan. It was started out as basically a way to maximize our investment of the turn back money and to look at how Broadway might be reconfigured in the future. We had a lot of input from our consultants and our city staff, and we went to and had a public hearing both for the North Project and the South Project. And the same group of bicycle advocates showed up at both, okay? And so the advocacy was taking place there, and it was taking place with basically a handful of 6 to 8 people. And we weren't hearing from pedestrians. We weren't hearing from other people. You know, it's an open house. You can't force people to come. But we provided the opportunity. Certain people showed up. That's what we hear. That's the sticky notes that get put on the plan. Those are what we think the public wants. And we know that there's more voices out there than we're getting showing up at some of our informational meetings all the time. And so this provides a very good cross-section of opportunities where we're getting input. Now, one of the responsibilities for each and every one of these members is to work with their advocacy group, if you will. I don't see this as an advocacy committee. The city administrator has made it perfectly clear to me in my department that this will not be an advocacy committee. This will be a committee that basically works to help inform Public Works and Parks and planning about some of the issues facing the community. And so we don't look at it as an advocacy. I think, quite honestly, if there are members who ultimately are appointed through the mayor's recommendation and yours, we're probably going to be giving you some feedback, but they shouldn't be reappointed when their term is up, because that's not what we're looking for. There are plenty of advocates out in the community that we don't need a committee to hear their voice. What we need to do is hear from people who aren't being represented at a lot of the public meetings and informational meetings that we have.
Mr. Campion?
I'd like to see a tie back in prior to the budget process.
So I think the same thing was coming up in my mind for the Energy Commission is, I think it helps to have a bug in our ear about what the policies of some of these that kind of role can be. Let's bubble the current state of the city in terms of the pedestrian challenges into a report that gets submitted to the council prior to the budgeting process. So as I'm developing my priorities for the next year, I'm acutely aware of if it's the Energy Commission, if it's the, you know, I think the acronym will change, RPBC here, whatever it's going to be. But as we shift this, we turn this on its head a little bit and say, it doesn't have to be a constant drip. It can be more of annually we're working on one way to boil this information up, and that way, as a strategic document, it's never older than 1 year away. Because I think a lot of this also comes back to how quickly some of our kind of planning department, those documents that are meant to help us facilitate those decisions age, and maybe having a group that has some sights set on keeping a particular kind of recommendation set would be pretty valuable, I think, from my perspective.
Ms. Means.
Thank you. I'm so glad that BPAC will be taken up the leadership of the Public Works Department. I think they provide a valuable resource, as they did, I thought, and when I was a member of BPAC. And so I wanted to thank you for that. I have a question about on page two, those members under A, and I wonder if you had considered, or maybe they're included in here and I just don't see it, working with United Way to get someone from that population, maybe someone from the underserved population that ride bikes to participate in this as well.
Then that one of the things to it, that's I think part of the focus of the bicycling for transportation, is that a lot of that population, you know, they don't.
How are you reaching them? Is what I'm saying.
Oh, I see. Thank you. Yep, good point.
And Mr. Newman, then Mr. Casey. Having written three ordinances that have prescribed memberships, I would suggest a little more flexibility on the mayor or the appointing body. I did this already. RCBB, the MCC Commission, and it gets hard to fill these slots. I agree with the concept that the mayor would say, but on the MCC, for example, he tries to fill those slots, and I think he's been able to do it so far, but it's been a struggle at times, so I'm just thinking you may want to just modify your language to make it a little more as a guideline than hard and fast, but still with the intent that they'll try to fill it. That's just a suggestion, because I know I've seen this now with several bodies and mayors where it gets hard to just say, I got somebody for exactly that spot. How do I move somebody else to this other spot? That's just a nit.
Okay. I got a lot of hands. Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Bildebeck, then Mr. Woodger.
So I've heard it stated a couple times that this is some kind of thing that's subordinate to Public Works. What I see is it's a separate board and commission, so I assume it's not subordinate to you.
No.
Right, so that's not a committee that works under Public Works. It's a separate board and commission.
Correct, and we just provide staffing to support the committee. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Goldbeck, Mr. Wojcik, and Mr. Quenville.
Just to go back and talk about the fact that had we had different groups part of this, you look at the South Broadway project, and we cross on three of the intersections. We don't cross the fourth one. It works fine for the bicyclists who can ride their bike down and cross on 14 down by the crosswalk down 14, but it doesn't work so well for the walking who try to get across, to try to get over the crossroads. Mm-hmm. And that's something we didn't hear about until after the fact. We heard either from groups who were opposed to the whole project, or we heard from some of the groups who were very supportive of the project, but we didn't hear from the pedestrians who really would be the ones who would benefit from across over to crossroads, a walkway. So I do think it makes sense to try to get some of these groups in there as well, because we do have a lot of people who just walk. We don't ride bikes, they don't drive cars. We need to listen to that group as well. And as far as helping out, I think that's where we as council members need to go out and work with some of these groups. some of the underserved population, we need to be out with those groups and try to encourage them to participate, as well as with many of us who have neighborhood associations in our neighborhoods. We need to be making that effort to get that information out to them to encourage people to apply.
I completely agree with what Gary's saying about don't try and make it too specific, but in this particular case, when I read these descriptions for the nine folks that are on there, they're such broad categories that we probably have hundreds, if not thousands, of people that fall into each one of these categories, so I'm not too concerned about how prescriptive this is. And I do think the one that's maybe the most prescriptive and might be the most difficult to fill is a pedestrian using mobility aids, which having that one on there, I'd pretty strongly support.
I can help fill that one. That's not an issue.
What are you going to do to me?
Whatever it takes.
Would you prefer walker or crutches?
We'll give you a choice.
All right, Mr. Quimble.
I just want to clarify what I indicated to Richard. I'm not against advocacy. I was against the establishment of another independent entity of which the development would have to go to prior to moving along. So I did not want to see another entity in the development permitting process that had to refer these projects to before it moved on to the next stage. The advocacy to the Public Works Department on transportation projects, et cetera, I think is definitely appropriate.
Mr. Ruskin?
Yeah, I guess at first I wasn't too excited about this. I'm still not so lukewarm to it, but I think if it's not Public Works that they report to, who is it that they report to then? Just nobody.
Well, my view is that there'd be, you know, the Public Works Department would staff them, and then they'd carry on their recommendations that they make to the Public Works Department to the City Council, to the development of the projects and programs that Public Works brings forth.
So let's try an example. Typically a new development, and oftentimes we see agency comments toward the back of the packet, fire department, GAS, all mm-hmm. kinds of people. Would you, in a new development, oftentimes will include bicycle paths or lanes or whatever. So would we expect in that scenario to let this group comment much like any of the other agencies? I'm seeing someone shake their head no.
Okay.
How do they get their input in?
So, again, I think one thing that Public Works helps to do in working with this broad spectrum of representatives from the community is understand better what the needs are, so that as we as staff are reviewing the applications, we understand the needs of the mobility disabled people in the community, of the recreational rider versus the bike rider who's using it for transportation purposes, so that we better understand that by working with them, and they basically understand better the type of things that we review through the development permitting process. So I think it's a matter, again, of just having a better understanding internally. I think we represent the needs of the community very well in our referral comments already, but there's always room for improvements and more knowledge from our perspective.
And, you know, that kind of goes back to my opening comments about the intent and purpose and process. We are often chastised because some group or entity or whoever didn't get approached in a timely fashion at the right time in the process, and then they're offended later on. So how do we ensure that we're getting the feedback we're looking for at the appropriate time?
So we had suggested a quarterly meeting. That was clearly indicative that individual development type projects would not be brought to this group. That's not the intent at all. The intent would be, so perhaps when Public Works is working on the annual striping program, they bring that to them and identify what's the striping program for the year and bounce some ideas off of them. It's something our two departments actually review together annually. Grant opportunities, sometimes you actually have to have a bike and pedestrian advisory committee to qualify for certain kind of grants. And having that committee there to give some feedback and input on the priorities for the grants can be helpful. Capital improvements program might be an opportunity. Again, these are things that happen on a cycle. Could bring items forward and get some feedback on. We have limited resources. Here are some of the competing needs. How would this group weigh in on that? Doesn't mean they have a decision authority, but they can get that feedback back to Public Works and
Yeah. So one is, there's a larger problem with the advisory committees of the council. That has nothing to do with BPAC. It has everything to do with, we've never taken the time to formally get this process under control and explain what needs to be referred where as it moves through the system and kind of formally establish what the expectations are as these things move through the system. That's wholly on us to take that responsibility, to lay that out with all the groups. So I think that's a responsibility that we need to take to start mapping out where all these things are and where we expect to get them to weigh in, what criteria are for when something should be referred, and not leave it to the council meeting time to decide to refer it, because that's not optimal. I think the second piece here is, I really appreciate having these boards available when you're not certain about what users of a style of transit that you may not frequent is. So I like being able to have an opportunity to refer it to a board, something such as, should we develop this corridor as a pedestrian kind of walkway? That's a neighborhood decision. It's also a broader community decision about where should these pedestrian kind of pathways be. So I think it's extremely valuable to us to have these, let's call them experts, let's call them, you know, have these members of these kind of communities available to be able to reach out to. And I think having them on hand versus having to go try and establish them when we want them, that's also got incredible value. I think you've laid out expectations here of them that are probably minimal. I guess I said the annual report. I'd really like to see some more of at least annual contact with these groups to make sure that we're keeping the interface open. But the second part is, I don't think someone picks this up and expects that they're weighing in on every proposal in front of the council. You read this, I don't think that comes out of this. So I think from that perspective, I have few concerns.
Mr. Newman?
Yeah, I think it's the council's decision whether you want to be advocates or not. But if your decision is, and you heard Steve's and these folks' opinion that that wasn't the opinion, then you probably should put it into that they're not. Because otherwise, 10 years down the road, it will morph into that, you know, likelihood. And so,
if it does, isn't that the way these things work? I mean, that's organic. That's local government. If this group becomes an advisory...
You can change it then, but what's your intent now? The way they've set this up, their opinion is that that was not the route that they were intending to go.
Yeah.
But I think you need to be clear, because otherwise, you know, a year down the road, something's going to come up mm-hmm. and not go that way.
All right, Mr. Wojcik, and Mr. Freeze, and Mr. Ruska.
The one thing I would say is, I don't think they necessarily need to be advocacy because there's a lot of advocacy groups that they'd be working with on this. What I would like to see is obviously the intent is to have them work with the public work staff and provide input in an early enough phase where they can be effective. But if at that point there's disagreement on the path forward, I would have no issue with them, you know, submitting a letter in our package, you know, addressing what the issues are. I think that's just part of being a good board, and they're not always necessarily going to agree.
So annually, we apply for several different grants for transportation enhancements or transportation alternatives. And the project that Mr. Bilderback referred to, the path along Broadway and the crossings of Broadway and the Beltline, really was initially set up to try to do that in two phases because the amount of the grant money wasn't enough to cover all of what we wanted to do there, okay? We knew that. It doesn't sound like you picked up on that, but we actually applied for the second part of that, for the crossing to the southwest corner last year and got denied in the grant application. But my point is, related to the committee, is staff-wise, we're putting forward recommendations to you out of the office with really no input from the public, and you're going along with our recommendations, and we thank you for that. But we think in the case of the committee here, we could have a lot more input about what the best project for the city of Rochester is for the 2019 or 2020 federal grant that we're applying for than what we see it just internally to the office or maybe working with planning and us. So they wouldn't be advocating, they'd be advising us that out of these four projects here's our priority, but did you think about this other one? And we may not even have it on our radar screen. So So we look at that as, again, providing another layer of public input to the process of grant applications. If I could, while I have the floor, I just want to make another comment here. So this group was involved, I believe, to some extent, in the bicycle master plan that the city ultimately adopted. In that bicycle master plan, it indicates that on 2nd Street Southwest in the St. Mary's District, there is to be no on-street bike lanes. Yet there are still people out there in the community advocating for that. Not advising, advocating for on-street bike lanes in the St. Mary's District. This group and members of this group in the past have indicated that's not the right corridor. 1st Street South is the right corridor. But so I'm just saying is that there's a bigger group of interested citizens out there than just sometimes the advocates that we hear at certain public meetings or in the case for certain public projects, or not private projects, that may be coming through the review process.
Okay. Mr. Rusker, then Ms. Voyager.
I guess, as I said earlier, listening to this, you know, originally I wasn't too hot about it, but you know, what Richard's saying makes some sense, but I think the key for me to support this is that it needs to be established as an advisory board and made clear that it's an advisory board and kept at that, because a lot of times we get people that have agendas get involved in these things, and then they turn into advocates, and then they turn into their opinions, right, and then it turns into this is what we have to do type thing, and I don't think that that's where we're trying to go. So with that, who's going to make sure, I mean, we can put some language in here, but is there the oversight to make sure that they stay on that kind of task?
Possibly. You might want to consider on the top of page 2, the Pedestrian and Bicycle Advisory Committee has the name.
And then further on page 3, where it says Pedestrian and Bicycle Committee will serve as a resource, we can modify that language to say serve as a resource group. And in parentheses say, not an advisory group. Yeah. To make
not
it very clear.
Advocacy.
I'm sorry, not as an advocacy group.
Okay. That would help.
All right. So what would be our next step? What's the next suggested step? Would we codify this and bring it forward?
Yes.
Just do it, or a public hearing, or what's the suggestion, pleasure, what?
With any ordinance, you're going to have a hearing.
Sure.
As part of it, right?
No.
Okay.
You don't have to.
So we would prepare a modified version and submit an RCA for amending the Register Code of Ordinances to establish this.
So I'm obviously very supportive of moving it forward. In terms of the hearing, I believe that just providing a place for commentary for a couple weeks is as good of a hearing and far more efficient for people as well. And then I just wanted to respond, though, on the stuff on 2nd Street. And I would tend to agree for the most part on right there. But I also know that bicycle master plan, which probably is already out of date because protected infrastructure has come a long way since that plan was first written. It also said no bike routes on Broadway through the downtown. It said put them on 3rd Avenue East and West. And that part of the bicycle master plan was completely ignored. And that's probably a good thing in the way it turned out. But that's not to say that we're always following those either.
When you do a much deeper corridor study and you look at that level of design element, mm-hmm. It's
yep.
a deeper opportunity to take a look at options, which when you're doing a comprehensive plan of systems across the whole community, you're not doing that level of analysis.
Okay. Mr. Mayor?
I comment with Sandra's comment about diversity. We are now piloting a different way of soliciting applications for our various boards and commissions, using the NeoGov system, which is a system primarily used to get job applicants, and we're having to deal with that. That some of the terminology in there said these people are not applying for a job. And so the anticipation is that we will get a broader pool of applicants, and so we'll see. But it's being piloted. We've used it now once, and we're still tweaking for a couple openings on the library board and for the which we don't do very often, is it's an airport advisory group too. That's basically for the runways and et cetera. So, so we'll see how that works for getting this broader pool, you know, by using NeoGov.
All right,
it's a pilot,
Mr. Campion.
The only other thing is I had some alternate language. Though the group's advice may be applicable, this group is not intended to weigh in on individual developments unless requested to do so by council or staff. I think the only reason I'd like to leave the door in there is if we specifically request them to weigh in, I think it could be useful to have their opinion on something, and I would prefer to let staff do it as well. If staff sees something coming to council that they think maybe outside the bounds of what we've had advice on in the past, I think it would be useful to allow staff to go to them to ask for their advice and bring it, or ask for their opinion and bring it forward as part of the development, especially if the applicant was so willing.
And there's nothing here that should prohibit.
So we're merely saying that the intent is not to bring it to them on a case-by-case basis.
Correct. And that the regular meetings would be quarterly.
All right.
That does not prohibit them from having.
Well, I hate to jump in.
Got it.
But if you're gonna, if you're saying, is that a vote of the mayor and council, or is it individual council member kind of like that? Because that's, I guess,
and the staff. It's, you know, the other thing is, you said four times a year, so that's every 3 months. And so if you're running through a development now, you got another layer of approvals.
That's why we don't see it
right
in that regard. It was never intended to have them as a referral agent.
I'll withdraw that if it gets us passed.
No, I think if it's requested by the mayor and council, I think it's fine, but it should be the body rather than. Otherwise,
perfect.
I think it's un.
I don't want what happened with the.
It
yeah.
just seems like it could be this. You could run into that confusion again. I'm just saying, be clear on what you want.
All right, I'll let Ms. Means chime in, then Ms. Gordon.
I just had a question if you could consider a flow chart when you talk about to whom should you. You know, how does it work? You know, the staff, you have the advisory committee coming to Public Works, and then what happens next? And, you know, something that would be more visual that include in the package.
You know, that big 11 by 17 that Lisa has, can you just figure out where it fits in that big old flow chart stuff?
Okay, sure.
All right.
I know, right?
So my take on this is that if this is an advisory group working with staff, staff should be able to engage this group without having the city council have a vote on it. That's my
thing.
Okay.
And we will have minutes, and we will distribute those to you. And if you, again, initially in the early stages, you see that we're going the wrong direction and we're doing things that you didn't find consistent with the direction you thought this was going to go, just let us know, and we'll be happy to share it with the group and have further discussions with you.
You know, okay. Mr. Campion mentioned about something like a flowchart for all of our groups, so they'll have a good indication of how the process should flow. That's another discussion.
With my public area, this too.
Yep. So we'll have another chance to talk about it.
And I would think we're probably, based on where we are in the calendar right now, we're looking probably first of the year, January, probably for that, to come back to the council for a public hearing.
Okay.
That's what you want to do.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Anything else for this afternoon?
Well, I did want to bring this up. I've suggested this a couple of times, and I'm a little uncomfortable with the length of the agenda tonight, particularly when we have an item that can be done on another night with the preservation ordinance. And I did have a couple of community members reach out to me that, you know, they're interested in coming to these, but not if they're going to start. The topic might start at 1 a.m. And I get that. I understand why our required public hearings are on our council meeting night, but there's just absolutely no reason why we couldn't do a preservation hearing next Monday night.
Now you realize four of the hearings have been requested to be continued. So.
I realize that.
Okay.
We keep our comments real limited today. We can probably get through it pretty easily.
What do you think the chances are?
I've seen late ones.
But I think that kind of gets to the problem, right? It's that at around 11:30 or midnight, people stop having the actual discussion about the topic and get very testy about how long it's taking to get some of these comments out. One of the ideas I was bouncing around my head for your leisure would be, is there an obligation that we don't gavel in after the cow? Because one option I see is if we extend the cow to go to 5:30, we might be able to take care of a number of the consent agenda items on the alternate Mondays. Just only allow consent agenda, no public hearing, put the consent agenda for it. We can pull things off of it and tackle those ones outside of Monday nights when we have 50 people sitting in the audience waiting to get to their item. And
we used to do that.
I'd be open to that.
Yeah, we did. Well, back then we had a 2 o'clock meeting. We took everything but the hearings in the afternoon. I'm just saying. Taking a position either way.
Why was that?
Because I think there was too long between meetings for the council. I mean, basically, you'd be booked from 2 o'clock until still 10 at night.
And they thought a lot of people weren't available to come at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
So they wanted to move all the way.
But the consent agenda items aren't really, I mean, other than staff, there's not too many people that are really there for this.
Or if we classify them, we say just staff consent agenda items that we have to work through then. I mean, it's on the record. We've made sure of that. Maybe we'll start videotaping it. I don't know where we got that. But I just think if we start moving some of this stuff and getting it after the meeting, there's a lot of kind of procedural stuff that might be able to be taken care of relatively quickly that's mostly council engaging with staff that way. The other option is putting times on things on the council agenda and letting people call the order of the day. And that way, if we got it too far into the weeds on one issue and you're waiting for the issue that's supposed to be started at 7:30 and you haven't on it, someone in the audience can stand up and call us on it and move forward to that item. I mean, that's the parliamentarian in me says that's a way to tackle this as well.
An observation that I have that plugs up a lot of council meetings is you have a tendency to continue a lot of items in the next meeting.
Yes.
And therefore, you get long meetings and then you have a tendency to continue it again.
And as Mr. Newman said, that's the way it used to be. They would meet in the afternoon and take care of some of the consent items. Then they would adjourn for dinner, and then they'd come back for the evening meeting.
Not only one meeting in the month.
Yeah. And when they came back,
we can still adjourn for dinner. I think that's fine.
Just
not together.
All right. Anything else?
No.
And we will see everyone at 7 o'clock.
Doesn't suck. I'll say it.